Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Star Wars Lore with Idiots, where your boy here, Ranger J 1999, your lore master, tries to teach a bunch of morons Star Wars lore, and it usually goes to pots. Glad to have you guys here. We do these weekly since we hit our Patreon goal. If you'd like to support the content that we're doing, go check out our Patreon. It's linked in the description of the video below. $5 or more, you get a ton of stuff on top of, one, you get the lore series early, and it supports all the stuff that we're doing here for the lore video series. And it's on YouTube, it's on Spotify, it's on Amazon, it's on Podbeam. The Spotify link's not working. I'm still trying to get that fixed. Eventually we'll get it on iTunes as a podcast, but they're being really stupid and ridiculous and they're driving me up the wall. I'm just about to say screw iTunes, because I just, every time I think I've got the step to get the damn link and the thing up, it doesn't work. So and kiss my butt. Feel free to leave comments on the video. Now, when we do lore, before I introduce all the idiots and get into it, hit the thumbs up, subscribe, but leave comments. Always appreciate it. Just be constructive. I don't put up with the nonsense. So if you're going to be an ass clown, I'll just delete the message and block him, because I don't care, because that's just the way I am. But if you have constructive comments or, you know, criticism, that's welcomed. And if the, you know, I cover these in a general sense. I don't get into the minutiae of details because I'm dealing with the potato heads. So just generalized stuff. So if you want to add anything in the comments about any of the lore, it's always appreciated. I don't mind, because I'm not getting into specifics. We're just doing that. Someday we'll get into specific with characters and really get into the minutiae. Those days aren't here yet. We're still in the early stages of teaching these guys lore. So there we go. That being said, Karth could not make this lore video. He's out somewhere in the wilderness in Vancouver, and he's up there in Canada, the maple syrup and good Canadian whiskey. We have replaced him with the Robin Hood of Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes and a Star Wars junkie. He robbed from the poor to give to the rich. That's Wolf. Robin Hood. Swago. There he is. Hello, Wolfie. Thank you for joining us as the resident idiot. And glad to have you here, buddy.
Idiot number, what am I? Idiot number two, idiot number 69, idiot number 420
you
checking
be.
In.
Yeah, whichever one you want to be. All right, yeah.
Idiot number 420 checking in. Happy to be here. Pleasure as always. Yes. Ranger, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be learn some lore.
Yeah.
You're Let's do it.
And I think you enjoy the topic for today. And what are you drinking, good, my good sir, as we all drink on this show? I drink heavily because I have to deal with these nonsensical dumbasses.
We got some high quality, just classic Knob Creek bourbon here today.
That's not a bad choice.
Very, can't very say anything fine. Better.
Excellent choice.
Very excellent choice. Speaking of excellent choices, Cashmere, one of our longtime resident dumbasses, is here as well. And he's always drinking a very, very nice selection of some kind of whiskey or bourbon. What are we partaking in today there, Cash?
Today we will be...
look at that bottle.
In the fancy bottle.
Ooh.
Will it pot still reserved?
Ooh, very nice. For the record, I'm just drinking some good old fashioned Jim Beam. So that's just my drink of poison today. And then last but not least, Elmer's glue's here, Rambam 001.
Where's the glue?
we're staring at it. horses be like, damn, we should just get more rams in the world and save a horse.
Save a horse, ride a Rambam.
Yeah, that's right. Ram, welcome. Again, long time resident idiot. What are you drinking today there, Ram?
I wear that title proudly.
I know you do.
No, I just got some good old Elijah Craig.
Oh, very nice.
With some Dr. P, good old mixture.
I am drinking Dr. P and Jim Beam. It's just my poison of choice. I like it. You know, I like a little soda.
Oh, can't go wrong.
Yeah, usually I start off, I always do this with any bourbon or whiskey. I take a little, get a little of that sour mash medicine in me first, a little shot, and then I just drink it with soda. Yeah, the way I like it. So, okay. So we're going to get into if you're new to the series, the way it works is I let these guys guess. That usually goes
have to guess.
Yes, but I want to give them the quote this time, because I think the quote, let's see what they can do with the quote. I think if I give them
there's no way we can mess this up.
There's no way we can mess this up, and we say this every time and they completely mess it up. So we're going to give them a quote, and then we're going to let the idiots, try to see if they can guess what today's subject is going to be on. All right. So resident morons, idiots of lore, are you ready for your quote? See if you can guess what this is going to be.
Bring it on.
I guess Honda.
Well, no, you have to wait till I actually read the quote. And then you can. Yeah.
Look, yeah, I'm trying here. Yeah. Okay.
And just for the
first time.
Yes. And just for, just, you know, if you guys want to learn more about this stuff, all the stuff I pick up from books, Wikipedia is a great source. If you want to learn more, you can get into the minutiae. A lot of times I just read off Wikipedia, add my own little parts to it. And just, it's the easiest way to do this with these guys. A lot of time I take my own notes. So, it just depends on what subject we're covering, but I've got shipped tons of books over there, that I use, as well as the source material that's provided by Wikipedia, but they do a good job. If you want to see the actual sources, that's tagged in Wikipedia. That's why I love Wikipedia. So you should definitely check out Wikipedia. Great source for Star Wars lore. And a lot of this is legends. There'll be some canon stuff that we're going to cover with today's subject. But again, it's an amalgamation of both. All right. Your quote for today. Here we go. Here's why you can't exterminate us, Aruti. We're not huddled in one place. We span the galaxy. We need no lords or leaders. You can't destroy our command. We can live without technology. So we can fight with our bare hands. We have no species or bloodline, so we can rebuild our ranks with others who want to join us. We're more than just a people or an army, Aruti. We're a culture. We're an idea. You can't kill ideas, but we can certainly kill you. All right. That being said, let that mill in your brains for a second. I'm letting the brain cells absorb that information.
So all I got is V for Vendetta, like that end of over there where he was like, I'm an idea. You can't kill an idea. And ideas are bulletproof.
Yeah, that's
not
wrong.
All I got.
Okay.
I have no
That's idea. Your guess. Even though it's a Star Wars
that's my guess.
Lore series, you're going for V for Vendetta. Although great
that's my guess.
Reference and great movie. I love V for Vendetta. No, that would be wrong. All right, Wolf stepping in right away and completely missing, completely wrong.
Man,
not even in the same media universe, but that's okay. I don't know why you thought on a Star Wars lore with idiots, Star Wars, you would cover V for Vendetta, but you know.
We like to tangent, you never know.
No, that's wrong. Shame on you. All right, Kashmir, I see the brain cells burning slowly over there. What do you think, buddy?
Well, I think we talked a lot in the saying, you talked a lot about knowledge and like, so learning things and things of that nature. So I think we're going to go over the Palpatine book club, what he selects for his book club selections.
Wrong.
What? Sure, that's a thing.
But it's not, that's not what
we don't think he had a book club.
Yeah.
I'm totally interested to read the books.
You know, I mean, that could be a thing, but it's not what the subject is for today. So that's wrong. So, okay, we're 0 for 2.
You think he had a book on the stick?
Just ignoring that statement, I'm not even going to cover the goddamn stick here. All right, Rand, non-stick related, non-mace related, non-Samuel L. Jackson related, not even close in any sense, not even in the same realm of possibilities. You cannot mention any of that stuff. That being said, he's going to try to come up with some bullshit nonsense saying that this is why it's not that. Ram, what is your guess on what the subject that we are covering today is?
Well, I mean, so based off of that statement, based off of that statement that you made about like a hive mind and like just you cannot kill us, but we can kill you. And well, that's what I heard. So anyways, we have to talk about it. This just boggles my mind.
Mace
has to be something about.
Not Mace. Who said that? Shame on you.
No, that was Wolfie. I didn't say Mace.
I know.
I didn't say
Mace. So I didn't say Ram. I said, so who's ever said that? Don't do that. That's going to get punched in the dick. All right.
We have to be talking about the inherent strategic advantages between people without hair and people with hair.
No.
Combat related. Like, I mean, there's got to be
inherent
advantages.
I get it. I get it.
That hair doesn't
get
in your face.
Saying,
and So being bald is definitely a strategic advantage.
Well, you're not
right?
Wrong. I mean, that's why the U.S. military and that's why with the men's is half short hair. Yeah. You know, for that exact reason.
That's why there's better Jedi who are bald and over other Jedi. No names mentioned, obviously.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll use the name, but Mace was a better Jedi than that hippie Kenobi.
No, no.
Not wrong.
That's just not, no. No, those are all horribly pitiful, awful answers, as is tradition here. That is wrong.
Can I get a real guess?
Yeah, go for it. A real guess? You're going to try for a real guess? Wally, God.
Infinite Empire?
We've already covered the ricotta. That's okay, not a bad guess, though. That's not a bad guess. Thank you, okay. Wolfie. All right, there you go. But no, we've already covered the ricotta on this show.
Do you want another real guess?
We could have delved deeper. You're not going to give me a real guess, Cashmere.
We could have delved deeper. You never know.
You know? That's true, but that's not a bad guess. So the way it's not bad, Wolfie. I'm not even going to give Cashmere the chance because I know he's going to give me a bullshit answer. So
no, I was going to say force powers.
No, we just covered force powers. You were there last week, man. What's wrong with you? Get out of here. I knew.
Are we talking about the frittata things? Those guys, those little bug things that we visited on Alderaan.
No, Sotor. We're not talking about the Killniks. No,
I was waiting for
the Killniks. There we go.
Yes, we covered that with the Celestials. No. Shush, all of you. Shush. No, today's topic is the Mandalorians. So today
we would have never guessed that one.
Yeah.
God knows. Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the Mandalorians. So we're gonna be covering the Mandalorians, and what I want to do in this one is we'll get through their. Just a rough idea of who the Mandalorians are, their starting history, but I'm not going through their entire history because we'll cover that, and we've covered some of the Mandalorian history in previous episodes with other lores like Exar Kun and stuff like that, which I'll bring up when I get into the notes and everything here. And then I want to cover their society, their religious beliefs, their ways, their family, their culture, so we can all get a better understanding of who the Mandalorians are, their early origins, where do they come from, and then how they are structured. Why are Mandalorians the way Mandalorians are? Where does that come from? So, and as always, we'll cover each subject, and then I'll open it up for questions each time for the idiots. It'll derail, and then I'll try to bring it back to the subject matter material. So let's get into it. So the Mandalorians. So the Mandalorians, known in Mando-A, which is the language that they speak, as the Mando-Aid, or Children of Mandalore, were a nomadic group of clan-based people consisting of members from multiple species all bound by a common culture. In the early years, Mandalorian culture revolved around battle, with war being a source of honor and pride in their community. The leader of the Mandalorians was known as the Mandalore, translated to Soul Ruler, and was rendered as Mandalore in Basic. Throughout their history, the Mandalorians were frequently allied with the Sith, perhaps most notably the Sith Lord Exar Kun. We discussed that in the Exar Kun video, and held a certain distrust and general dislike of the Jedi Order. However, they would not hesitate to cooperate with the Jedi if a partnership between two groups was mutually beneficial. In later years, the Mandalorians moved away from their obsessively warlike and conquer ways, and instead most became bounty hunters and mercenaries, selling their skills to various individuals and factions in the galaxy. However, the Mandalorian protectors sided with the Alliance to restore the Republic ever since about 3 ABBY. This is Legends material, and even continued to serve the Alliance of Free Planets, the New Republic, and finally the Galactic Alliance. This all happens after, you know, the battle, after Return of the Jedi. All the books and stuff, this is what that's referencing. The Mandalorians began, and so we good so far? So let's get into where do they come from? The Mandalorians began as a humanoid Tong species from the planet Coruscant. So they originated from Coruscant. Intense fighting.
Really?
Intense
from the Galactic Center. That's interesting.
Yeah. Intense fighting with the 13 human nations of Coruscant, known as the Battalions of Zell, began millennia before the Republic. And when a powerful volcano nearly wiped out the humans and darkened the skies over Coruscant, Tong came to call themselves Da Warda Verda, the Warriors of the Shadow. Despite the volcano's devastating effect, the Tong were eventually driven off Coruscant and took refuge on the world of Rune. Led by the warlord known as Mandalore the First, they would conquer another planet in the Outer Rim in 7000 BBY, or Battle Before Yavin, which they named Mandalore after their leader. The Tong took on the name Mandalorians, were seen by many as the most skilled fighters in the galaxy, thriving in battle. These Mandalorian crusaders were known for their use of cutting-edge weaponry and held to a strict code of honor, and wore armor known simply as crusader armor that differed from one soldier to the next. For thousands of years, Mandalore's new inhabitants would not stray far from the Mandalorian sector, instead venturing on a series of further conquests to capture the worlds of Orda, Gargan, and Shogun. When the Mandalorians came to the nearby Mandalia, though, the Mandalian giant natives not only repelled the invaders' assault, but many came to join the Mandalorian culture, having impressed the Mandalorians with their strength and prowess. By nearly 3,000 years after Mandalore's conquest, at a point prior to 4,000 BBY, the Mandalorians begin to expand their ongoing crusade outward, engage the Nevota species in a conflict that will lead to an extermination of the Nevota and the defecation of war in the Mandalorian culture. Personified as the Destroyer Guard, Cad Herringer, shortly before 4,000 BBY. The Mandalorians were led by a new Mandalore, Mandalore the Indomitable, who we've talked about before, and in their continuing campaign of expansion, the Mandalore led a raid on the planet Iskredel. There, the Mandalorians free the slaves, take on many of them into their culture, including a young Antos Warrick. Another victim of the Mandalorian Crusade was the planet Baslik. As the Mandalorians invaded, the Galactic Republic sent a relief force under the command of Jedi Master Drona Dyth to aid of the Basliks. Even the Republic support, the Baskins found their lines being overrun by more Mandalorians, and upon realizing they were going to lead the battle, they decided to poison their own planet so that the conquerors would not be able to use it. Baslik fell, but because the planet's surface was virtually destroyed, the Mandalorians decided to bend the world and move on, though not before pillaging a sizable number of war droids for future. The Mandalorians also captured a large number of the reptilian Basiliskins, and through centuries of warfare, they degenerated into a little more than a war-mounts and beast of burden, becoming known as Lagerzot's War Dragon. Now, that's their early Sith. Now, we've talked about this. There's two main episodes. So we see where they go. They find Mandalore. They start the Mandalorian culture very much. And we'll get into the religion and culture and social beliefs. For 3,000 years, it wasn't until the introduction. We talked about this on the previous lore video of Exar Kun enlisting the aid of the Mandalorians in the first, you know, or the second Great Hyperspace War. He was also, and then we also talk about the different Mandalorians and the Revan, the one we did on Revan. They were a big part of what caused Revan to get involved in the war of the Mandalorian War that led Revan to get involved in everything that happens. And pretty much it leads up to Knights of the Old Republic, Knights of the Old Republic 2. Now, it was after the battle against Revan, where they decided, you know, on their genocidal crusade, that Revan basically kicked their ass so hard, that's when they started changing their ways. That's when they stopped being conquerors and they started becoming more of their clans and mercenaries and bounty hunters, and just Mandalore was still there. They still had their system, but they stopped expanding after that and just were guns for hire. They would go to war because that was one of their big things. Whenever the war would break out, the Mandalorians would go there and fight in it, or they would become mercenaries that would join that war for both sides, or they would just become bounty hunters. You know, that was their big thing because they could do it. That being said, that's all the early stuff on the Mandalorians. We're going to get into the specifics now about the culture and things of that nature. We always pause. We always ask questions. You can see the wide-eyed stares of the idiots. Who's got questions? Who wants to ask a question?
Gotta break it up a little more and like get a little more like conversation going as we're going on over there, because there's some very interesting things going on.
What do you got?
With the Mandalorians and everything.
What do you got? Yeah, what do you want to say? Yeah, go for it.
Losing track as we're going through all of it. I'm trying to think where I was going. Come back to me. Try to.
What do you want to have a conversation? Is what you said. So I mean, what did you want to talk about specifically on the stuff that I just covered? Or ask questions. That's what this is for. Ask questions.
Hold on.
I will come back to you. Cash, any questions so far?
Are we up to the Mythosaur yet?
Spoilers. Spoilers, everybody do this. Spoilers.
Listen, we don't have to spoil anything.
We have to, because I can't talk. There's going to be some spoilers in this for current season of the Mandalorian season 3, because it ties in. Okay, I have to. If we're going to cover the Mandalorians, I got to cover it. The Mythosaur was brought by Mandalorian the First. That's, remember the thing in the cave? Then they read the thing. That's who that is. And that's the founding of the planet Mandalore and Mandalore the First and the whole thing. I think it was Mandalore the First that she said, right? Mandalore the First?
I want to say Mandalore the First, yeah.
Yeah, Mandalore the First. That's where this all comes from, with the whole story of the Mythosaur that was supposed to be a legend, but it's true. Because the symbol of the Mandalorian, the entire culture, is the Mythosaur skull. Does that help you answer your question there, Cash? That was actually a really good question. I'm very proud of you right now. Let's not ruin it. Okay, let's not ruin it, because I'm in a good mood right now. We'll ruin it now by Ram. I know you're over there scheming. What's your question, dude?
So you said that the Mandalorians fought a battalion of some people, right?
Planet.
A battalion of a planet?
Basilisks.
The Basilisks were a battalion of a planet?
No.
Or of a people?
I didn't say anything about a battalion.
You said a battalion. I heard the word battalion.
Ram, what's your question, man?
So I'm just saying, you know, Wolfie, how's it feel to fight off against the Mandalorians? You know, with battalion.
Let's do it. Yeah. I think we got them.
I knew what you were doing. I'm still putting my money on the Mandalorians.
I'll blind them all.
They have helmets for that.
My shine bright like a diamond.
All right. So what I was getting at earlier was I thought it was interesting. Like they're going on trying to conquer the galaxy and everything, and then Revan was the one that humbled an entire people.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh no. You're not these conquering that you think you are. I'm putting a stop to this. And he just like single handedly humbled an entire people and brought them over there, and you know,
yeah, he decimated
turned them into what they are today, which I thought was really crazy.
In the Revan episode, the story goes, it's legend, but it's, you know, legend material. There was a planet they were on. The Mandalorians were genociding at that time. One of the Mandalorians, a female Mandalorian,
is that a verb?
What, Mandalorians?
Yeah. No, genociding.
Yeah. They were committing genocide. Does that work for you better? Better English? No, they wiped out the
all words are made up.
So when Revan first got to the war, because you know the whole story with Revan, but when he got there, they had a force vision. They found all the dead bodies, but he saw what had happened. This female Mandalorian tried to stop them from doing it, because there was, to her honor was, these people are defenseless. We conquered. We already won. Why are we destroying them? And she tried to stop them, and she died. Revan, they got this force vision from him picking up her mask, and that's the mask that Revan wears, is a Mandalorian mask from that time. And he made a vow then and there that he would basically destroy the Mandalorian. And in 3 years' time, he basically did. Not only did he kill, I think it's Mandalore the Indomitable that he did. I can't remember which Mandalore it was, or Mandalore the... It was one of them, but I don't remember specifically. I don't have my notes in front of me, but he not only did he defeat them, but he basically kicked their ass so hard. That's when the Mandalorians broke into factions and clans and stuff like that. That's how bad she kicked their ass. He made it a vow, and that's what happened to the Mandalorians. So is that more? Because with Exar Kun, they fought, but they just got their ass kicked, but they went back to their planet and said, okay, we lost, but you know, they left Exar Kun and said, okay, you suck, and we'll come back another day. And they did. And they were manipulated by Vitiate, who caused the war with the Mandalorians and the Republic. Does that answer your question there, Wolfle?
Indeed.
Anything else?
Less of a question, more of a yo. Pretty Revan cool. Was a badass.
Oh, Revan, yeah. We've talked about Revan, yeah. You can see him behind me right there. You can see the old cosmic Darth Revan there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's too little.
Anyways, back to Mandalorians.
Back to Mandalorians.
Also badasses.
They are very much badasses. Okay. And if you guys, as I said, we're going through this, you have a question, just interrupt me. It's fine. Now, as I said, we're not going to get into the full history. We'll cover the Mandalorians when they pop up in the history. And the legends kind of cool, because in legends, this is not legends, in the material of legends, Boba Fett actually becomes the next Mandalore in the legends book. He becomes the guy. Actually trains Jaina Solo to defeat her brother, you know, Jason. Gives her Beskar Mando, trains her in the Mandalorian ways. There's a lot of cool stuff in the Legends material pertaining to what happens with the Mandalorians, but that's no longer canon. So just a fun little fact for you guys about Boba Fett.
All cool things are no longer canon.
I know. What we can do. All right, let's talk about culture. And again, if you guys
I like
have any
that they're
questions.
Bringing things into canon as they are. I they like are. That they didn't just immediately canonize everything. I like that they're bringing things in. It's got to be a slow drip just by nature. So I'm okay with them bringing things in as they are.
And Filoni,
they could bring some more cool things
in. Filoni,
but,
we trust.
You know.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, as I said, as I'm reading this material, if you have any questions, stop me. Ask questions. That's what we do here. If not, I'll just go read through the material. And you guys can ask questions after we get through each section. Okay, culture. Let's get into the culture. Early Mandalorian culture, originating with the ancient Tong species, was believed to have begun as a religious warrior society with sophisticated laws and customs that went on to become the canons of honor. War was practiced as a form of ritual worship to their multiple gods. But following the destruction of Nevada, war itself became a god personified by Cad Aurangir, the destroyer god. In Mandalorian mythology, Cad represented the opportunity for change through destruction and was eternally opposed by Arusum, the personification of stagnation and activity. Because of this, many of the Mandalorians' earliest conflicts were seen as holy wars and their warriors known as the Mandalorian Crusaders. As time went on, the majority of the Tong had perished by the end of the Great Sith War. The Mandalorians began accepting beings of other races and species into their fold, viewing those who joined them on equal footing to those who had been born into their culture and transforming what it meant to be a Mandalorian. Having become a mixed group of beings from numerous worlds and species, those who considered themselves Mandalorians were bound by a single unifying culture rather than any one race, and they believed that an individual was defined by their actions rather than the circumstances of birth. So far, so good? All right. Central to the Mandalorian culture was the Rezolinar, or the six actions. These six tenets defined what it meant to be a Mandalorian, and any who wished to be considered as such was expected to abide by them. The Rezolinar consists of wearing armor, speaking the Mandalorian language, defending oneself along with one's family, contributing to the welfare of your clan, rallying to the Mandalore when summoned, and raising one's children in the Mandalorian ways. In order to retain their heritage in the face of outside influence, Mandalorians placed a high value on rigorously carrying out the Rezolinari's tenets in a daily manner. However, interpretation of the Rezolinari differed, and at least one group of Mandalorians, the new Mandalorians, potentially followed an alternate interpretation of this by doing away with personally owned sets of armor and refusing to aid the Mandalorians. Now this gets into, we'll get into the new code, the creed. In a bit, we'll cover the creed and what it means. But this is the this is where it all starts from.
So far, so good. Starts to break off over there, and you know, different interpretations and what they're looking at as the Mandalorians. So that's where it all starts to get interesting, so to say.
Yeah,
this is the way,
and expands over time. And you know, we saw it in we've seen it in the Mandalorian show. You know,
yeah,
talking about the Children of the Watch and the different factions, and we saw the Night Owls and everything. You know, the Death Watch and all of them vying for power and all this stuff. They all had interpretations of what the code is. Certain things they always followed, but they all had a different interpretation. Like the Children of the Watch have a totally religious, zealous following of what it means to be a Mandalorian, unlike Bo-Katan. Who doesn't walk the path. He's a Mandalorian. Listen, you know, she's a princess of Mandalore, but she doesn't walk the path, and we'll get into that.
So this is a lot like the Amish, just with violence.
What? How do you make that? How the hell did you make that leap?
Well, they have a lot of rules, and you know, your children.
Just religion in general, Just religion in general. I don't know how you came up with the Amish.
I can see the correlation.
No.
It's like every religion. It's not just
really.
The Amish.
It really is. Yeah.
I was thinking about early Christianity and like the split, like the original great schism between Catholicism and Orthodoxy over there. That was where like I was
Look
thinking.
Look at this. This is brilliant. But and in the lore, we've seen it, right? The Jedi. We talked about the Jedi broke off to become the Sith and the Jedi. That's what happens. Now the Mandalorians are
good correlation there, Kashmir.
Yes, it was not.
Thank you, Ram.
Shame on you, both of you. Shut up.
Ram.
Shut up! The Mandalorians are a nomadic people with the roots of their tradition tracing back to the Mandalorian Crusaders' tendency to make conquered worlds their home. Even long after the conquest of Mandalore, the Mandalorians would hold on to these nomadic traditions, partially out of the attachment to the Always, but also as a means to avoid presenting a single target to any enemy who wished to wipe them out. Thus, Mandalorian communities have cropped up across the galaxy, and there are many Mandalorians who have never stepped foot off Mandalore. Mandalorian families never expect their current home to be permanent, nor do Mandalorian soldiers. Portability is desired over a large number of material possessions, and even the traditional Mandalorian dwelling known as, I can't pronounce this word, but Vayame, was designed to be set up for temporary occupation and easily just deconstructed or abandoned. While many cultures with a settled location celebrated events and festivals that were derived from the changing seasons for their homeworld, The Mandalorian's nomadic cousins have left them largely disconnected from these sorts of cycles as they travel from world to world. Though Mandalorians who come from Concord Dawn generally still mark the end of the planet's harvest, on the whole, most Mandalorians have taken celebrity mainly the events of the life cycle, such as birth, coming of age, marriage, and death only. Burials for the dead are also uncommon due to the inability for nomads to sustain cemeteries and the impracticality of bringing bodies with them on the move. The Mandalore would be given a proper burial as a sign of respect unless they chose otherwise. Mass graves and cremation were common when a body could be recovered, with the ashes of those cremated scattered in one of the fallen's possessions, often their armor, kept in memorial. If a full set of armor couldn't be recovered, it was commonplace to retrieve smaller parts such as helmet, gloves, or plates instead. It was also Mandalorian custom to recite the name of loved ones or friends who had passed each night before sleep as a means of keeping their memory alive. The uncertainty of life meant that most Mandalorians celebrated the time they had at every opportunity, taking part in communal singing, drinking, and enjoying time with family. The concept of Ahain, or Ahan, was a Mandalorian term that encompassed the joy of time spent with loved ones while remembering those who were no longer among the living. Relatively similar to the basic term bittersweet. All right, questions. Everything going pretty cool so far.
I had something over there. Okay, there was I thought it was like very interesting, like the with religion in general, you see a lot of like the holidays. You know, you think about like Christianity, there's there's Christmas, there's Easter,
Good Friday, Palm Sunday, yeah.
All the things in there with Judaism, you see a lot of different holidays, all about over there. It's very interesting that they, like, as a nomadic people, they are like, don't have those sort of things. If they're going around a galactic nomadic people, so there's different worlds and different cycles and different year lengths and different everything, and trying to match all that stuff up must have been absolute hell.
Didn't care. For them, it was birth, coming of age, marriage, death. That's it.
I can get that, man. Yeah, absolutely.
And we actually saw the coming of age in the new Mandalorian season, you know, with the Children of the Watch, with their creed and everything. We'll cover what that means here in a second. Kashmir, you look like you're about to have an annual.
I was going
to
say, they didn't even celebrate the 4th of July. Barbecues. Good times.
America.
Fireworks.
Fuck yeah. Oh,
God. Can you imagine the Mandalorians being like that? Mandorlia. Mandalorians, if gonna kick the mother damn girl. Oh, God. All right. Ram, any thoughts so far? Afraid to ask.
Mandalorian,
Yeah.
Mandalorian.
God. All right, last thing. The ancient Mandalorian Crusaders and the Neo-Crusader replacements lived and thrived on war, seeking conflict and attaining glory through conquest. But following the end of the Mandalorian Wars, the ones we just talked about with Revan, many Mandalorian soldiers would become bounty hunters and mercenaries, selling their services to the highest bidder. The mercenary trend would become a part of the culture of thousands of years to come, and many in the galaxy saw the Mandalorian as little else. However, while mercenary work and bounty hunting would be a primary means of income for the Mandalorians, there were a wide assortment of other jobs Mandalorians typically took on. Several Mandalorians earned their living as weaponsmiths, or bodyguards to the host population of the worlds they lived on. Others remained in the Mandalorian sector, toiling in workshops or factories or working the land as farmers. Several Mandalorians on Mandalore worked with what might be considered domestic occupation, tending bars and running shops, as well as working as doctors and veterinarians. Despite the wide array of professions Mandalorians took, every Mandalorian was combat trained, and they could band together into an army on short notice. In addition to the general misconception that all Mandalorians were mercenaries, Mandalorians were also considerably more sociable than many would expect. As long as individuals spoke their mind and said what they meant, accepted a meal when offered, as an offered meal was a great compliment for a nomadic society that often lived hand to mouth. Looked them straight in the eye or on the horizontal section of their visor when wearing a helmet, took off their boots when entering their home, paid their debts, fused over their children, never made a pass at a Mandalorian of the opposite sex unless the individual planned to become part of the culture, and respected the elderly. As any Mandalorian who has reached such an age would be an exceptional warrior. Anyone encounter a Mandalorian outside of combat was unlikely to come to. Pretty cool. All right.
Mad respect. That just seems like they're just a very down to earth. I mean, obviously they respect combat and everything over there, but you know, don't screw with them, and they're not going to screw with you. Yeah. And you know, keep your wits about yourself. And you know, it really just seems like they got a good thing going.
Yeah, it was after the defeat by Revan, things changed. I mean, they were only warriors, but they're. The lust for conquest and war was driven by conquest, you know, and following the Mandalore into whatever plan of action he did. And that's what led to them just going mental, yeah, because they wiped out cultures during the Mandalorian Wars. And before then, they were very, if you weren't Mandalorian, you weren't shit and you had to die, kind of the way it was. It changed after that, where it became more about traditions of the Mandalorians and living by the code. And it didn't matter what you were doing, but you were always a Mandalorian first. And whether you're a bounty hunter or you are a farmer, you're a Mandalorian. You were trained, you're ready to rock and roll in a modus nomadus, but that's the way it worked. And that changed and evolved over the thousands of years leading to the.
Right. Seems like a good evolution, you know.
Yeah. Not that there weren't sects that were, you know, we talked about, you know, we mentioned the Death Watch and stuff, but I mean, yeah, there's always baddies, but for the most part, they were very much about the code, about honor and protecting your family and doing all those kind of things. And they're very accepting. If you became a Mandalore, it didn't matter your race, sex, any of that stuff. You were Mandalorian. Once you took the creed, you were part of the family. You were expected to live by the, you know, the tenets, but you were Mandalorian. They didn't look at, you know, birth as the only way to be a Mandalorian. You know, you could become part of the Mandalorian once you made the vows. And
I thought that was different races, different everything. Yes. Yeah.
It's really cool. Ram, you look like your heads are going to explode now. What's going on there, buddy? You have the frown. Your brows are going downward. Terrifies.
No, it's just a lot to take in.
All right. Any other questions?
So I do have a question So they did have, because in the... You know, movies, TV shows, all that, they only show Mandalorians being human. But there were other species in other medias that were not human.
Yeah. I mean, it became more human, you know, as time went on. But I mean, in the Legends material, I don't know how they're presented.
Okay. So Legends.
This is more Legends material, right? Anybody could be a Mandalorian. And the new shows, if you get into the Clone Wars, it didn't seem that way, you know, with the current canon. And of course, well, you know, with the way things are portrayed now, with the way.
Actually, I guess.
You got to think this is over, 6,000 years since the end of the Mandalorian Wars. So you can see how it was expanded with Mandalore still being the central focus. And. You know, the things change over time.
What's Kashmir about to say?
Well, actually, I was going to say, actually, now that I think about it, I mean, I don't know how technical this would be, but with Maul, I mean, he made himself Mandalorian.
He threw combat.
So I guess that would...
Yeah.
And also with Din.
Would answer my question.
Mm-hmm. You know, thinking with him, he happens to be human, but he didn't have to be. That could have been a Rodian base that they were, you know, a Rodian village that they were saving. And if they had brought him in and adopted him in, and, you know, as long as you take the code,
Grogu, he wasn't born Grogu's into accepted it.
Yeah.
As
Grogu.
That's why I was thinking, is Grogu going to be the first official Mandalorian?
But they made Maul canon now with everything as part of that. So, I think it still stands to reason that anybody can become a Mandalorian.
It's going
to
be interesting with Grogu, though, because he doesn't have a helmet yet.
No, but we'll see which path he decides to take. I mean, he doesn't have to. The Children of the Watch, if you take off your helmet, that's just one of their things. You're not a Mandalorian. I just disagree with that, because I think it's more about the way you live and who you think you are, right? You know, because Bo-Katan takes off. I think Bo-Katan is totally is a Mandalorian, whether you want. She's part of the royal family, for Christ's sake.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know, you can. The Children of the Watch can say, you know, if you remove your helmet, you're no longer Mandalorian. I just find that excessive. But whatever, it's religious zealotry.
Yeah.
And let's get into that, because we're going to get into the creed.
Let's
This is more canon. So if you watch Mandalorian, spoilers again, but in the beginning, this, I swear on my name and the names of my ancestors that I shall walk the way of the Mandalore, and the worlds of the creed shall be ever forged in my heart. This is the way.
Now, this is the way.
This is the way.
This is now, the way.
The way.
Now we get into the story. I'm going to get into the story as we cover.
Do we have the actual creed?
That's the. I don't have. I looked it up. I couldn't find the actual creed, but the creed is this. But I don't know what the tenets are of that, other than, you know, yeah. Did you remove your helmet? Has anyone seen your face? And then you're no longer Mandalorian. That kind of thing. Couldn't find anything on it. Did some research, but I'll keep looking. If anybody can find it, please let me know. I just couldn't. I mean, I know what the what you swear when you become part of the Children of the Watch, but I couldn't.
Yeah,
find,
never really thought about that. Yeah.
You know what this specific. We talked about the six tenets that are in the Mandalorian history, right?
Right.
Are those it? I don't know. So
there's no like written out specific creed, you know,
not
like
that I've seen
have
yet,
a creed,
but I
a whatever
it.
Yet.
Yeah. So, okay.
And then the last time, like the last two people we saw trying to say the saying, whatever the exact saying is, as they're going into the water, they got interrupted.
Yeah.
Taking the oath. Yeah.
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 Now let's talk about the creed real quick, with the new season of the Mandalorian. Now the creed required in previous episodes that bounty hunter Jin take care of the foundling, which Grogu is. He's a foundling. So he was reunited with his people, the Jedi. So loyalty and solidarity are important to the creed, and opposite to the Jedi Order, who are opposed to all attachments. Mandalorians who follow the creed helped fellow Mandalorians, and they kept their word even in risk of death. According to the creed, if the Darksaber was won by battle, for instance, whoever wielded it could lead all of Mandalore. According to the armor, the Great Purge of Mandalore was a curse prophesied in the Creed, and happens because those born on Mandalore strayed away from the path and lost their way. And when the Darksaber was gifted to Bo-Katan, it went against the Creed. And that was from Rebels. You don't know that. That was when
Sabine
gave her the Darksaber. Those that walked away escaped the curse prophesied in the Creed. So when foundlings who follow the way come of age, they perform the Mandalorian initiation ritual for the foundlings swearing of the creed. The ceremony included banners with clan signets and drummers. The foundling had to stand in water, recite the words of the creed, and to swear to walk the way. A helmet is placed on the foundling's head, and the tribe joins to say, "This is the way." Then the foundling then swears to remove his helmet, never to remove his helmet from this moment on. That's all we know so far. They talk about it. We never saw it, but in this latest episode 2, Bo talking about that same kind of ritual. You step in the waters, it's a big deal and all that stuff. But she thought it was more pomp and circumstances and kind of like just boring religious nonsense that she had to go through as a princess of Mandalore. But then we see, as she's talking about it, you see the exact opposite with the young boy that's in the water when the armorer is presenting him the helm. So,
the dry like sarcasm dripping like as she's saying, "Oh, they love to see us take the creed and do the everything." You could just like you could feel the disdain coming off over there. No man, we're getting into spoiler territory.
No spoiler. It's all spoilers. Like we just already said spoilers, so we have to talk about.
We're talking about Mandalorians. Like they're gonna cross over.
It's naturally, it's gonna happen.
So here's
disdain with what she was like discussing the creed and like taking the oath and over there and oh man.
Yeah, to her it's just it was like okay, gotta go through this ceremony. Whoopity doo, right? What's that have to do with our fighting? And she saw what happened. And it does happen through the Clone Wars and up through the Purge and everything. Bo's seen it all. She's been there, done that, right? She's seen it. She saw what happened with the clans fighting against one another and having different interpretations of the creed and everything.
And like weren't united against the Empire.
Yeah, and that's why they got obliterated, So,
I got a question. So, you said whoever wins the Darksaber in battle becomes Mandalore and is the leader of Mandalore, right?
Become the Mandalore. They don't have to. The original Darksaber was not for Mandalore. The original Darksaber was from a Jedi that was a Mandalorian.
Sure. Yeah.
And then
that Jedi became Mandalore, right?
No. He was his own thing. But the Darksaber itself came to emphasize.
The Darksaber got passed down and became.
The Darksaber was stolen from the Jedi Temple and became like a symbol of the Mandalorians.
Right. And then it was one of combat. Now the person could become the Mandalorian. They didn't have to.
Okay.
Jin
so
doesn't
why
have to become the Mandalorian. It said so when I just read that. They don't have to become the Mandalorian. They can choose.
Back
to.
And forth.
They can lead the people with the Darksaber, but it has to be one combat. Now Jin won it in combat.
Right, he won it in combat. So why haven't the Mandalorian Coven and all them. I understand why Bo doesn't accept it, but why haven't the other Mandalorians like, oh shit, you got the Darksaber, and we know you won it in combat.
The only one that knows about
it. You're Mandalore.
But the only one who knows about it is the armor and Vizsla.
And everyone respects the armor, so everyone would listen to her if she was to say, oh, by the way.
But she hasn't said it.
He hasn't shown it to anybody. Remember, he's not been there. He's apostate during all this. So they've not seen or heard or talked to him since.
Well, I'm saying when he went back and stopped by, you know, that episode where they had the ceremony, everything. And right there, he could have been like, oh, yeah, by the way, actually in Book of Boba. That episode of her over there, when he was talking to the armor, he had the Darksaber. You know, clearly he is the Mandalore at that point, technically.
If he wanted, but he took off his helmet, so in her eyes, he's not even Mandalorian.
Right.
It's just the same as when Moff Gideon had the Darksaber. Yes, you have it. You could lead us, but you're not a Mandalorian. So,
but it doesn't matter. Maul was Mandalore, and he didn't have a helmet.
Never wore a helmet.
You have to make the distinction here, Ram. The children of the Watch believe that. Other Mandalorians don't believe that. Like the Night Owls, Bo's crew, all those guys, they don't follow that shit. They don't believe that.
Mm.
Remember? Because they all take off their helmet in season two of the Mandalorian. He's like, you've removed your helmet. And then she's like, yeah, you're part of the children of the Watch. You know, that kind of thing. So the differing viewpoints, but they all accept the Darksaber. Again, there's things that they will accept and there's things that they will differ on and bicker on. It's like, I mean, Wolf brought it up. It's like Protestant, Catholic, different views. They still believe in Christianity, but they just have a different way in what they believe and respect and
their
tenets. Different traditions, different traditions. Interpretations, you know, and yeah.
Neither right or wrong, it's just their interpretation of it. You know, so you have to kind of think of it in that mindset, which is why I love this season so far. It's so good.
It is so good.
The one thing,
just dropping these nuggets here and there. When she read that stuff on the wall, I was just like, oh, you
know, like, oh my God. And then the Mythosaur was just like, oh,
I know. That was like, ah.
The one thing I will say is we wouldn't have had to worry about spoiler alerts if we would have talked about Palpatine's book club and the books that were being read. No, I'm sorry, please go on.
Yeah, we're gonna continue to go on because I have no choice. Okay, so let's get into actually the religion. Okay.
Sure.
The Mandalorian religion was the accumulated spiritual and mythological beliefs of the Mandalorian warrior culture. Like the Mandalorians themselves, the religion saw numerous changes throughout the course of history, with several concepts evolving or falling out of popular practice over time. The ancient Mandalorians and their culture's Tong founders were intensely devoted in their beliefs, forming a deeply religious society. Creation myths such as we talked about before, the War of Life and Death, were viewed literally in ritual combat was waged in worship of Cad, the Destroyer God, who the Mandalorians believed represented change and it was opposed to. We talked about. So this obsession with battle reached its pinnacle when the Mandalorians came to define war itself and believe that to wage war was to be divine. However, this zealotry did not last. Over time, the Mandalorians grew disillusioned with their former fanaticism and war-worshipping ways. Mandalorian beliefs became more secular and pragmatic. Their ancient myths of warring gods and stories portraying the fallen rulers of Mandalore as the nighttime stars were viewed as philosophical parables. Modern Mandalorians sought to derive allegorical insight from these tales rather than fact, as their ancestors did. The belief in a literal afterlife waned in favor of belief in the Manda, a collective oversoul described as the very essence of being a Mandalorian. A Mandalorian ignorant of their heritage and culture was considered to be Dar Manda, soulless, and they would have no place in the Manda after death. To be Dar Manda was considered a terrible fate by Mandalorians, and in great importance was placed upon knowing and living the culture as defined by the Rezolinari, the culture's sixth. So now you kind of get to see how this has evolved over time, where the Children of the Watch have their own view, and now the other Mandalorians have their own view. And we haven't even got to the family and clan aspect of this, or why that is actually more prevalent.
Well, just real quick on that, I was going to say, like, the modern Mandalorians, it's it really feels like a dedication to the culture, dedication to the people, dedication to all of that. I don't like feel any of the dedication to a god, dedication to a higher power, dedication to any of that sort of stuff from the modern Mandalorians that we see in all of that stuff. You know, this is the way, this is the everything. It's all, you know, to the creed, not to the god, to the creed, to the, to your brothers, to your family, your clan or whatever. It really seems like they've, like you were saying, they have moved beyond the, you know, adherence to a god sort of thing and just made it about a culture sort of thing, which I think is an interesting development over over time for the Mandalorians.
Yeah, when what Bo said, she looked at all that as religious mumbo jumbo when she was doing her ceremony. It's like, okay.
Yeah, I didn't realize there was much of a
Mythosaur rode the first Mythosaur, whatever. Okay, you know, now, but that's, and the cool thing is she's seen it now, so she's like, I gotta start questioning some stuff here, you know. Her head's spinning a little bit. Anything else from the idiots? Okay, so let's talk about families and clans. And we're gonna get into this, and then a couple other things. We're gonna get into their armor too, because I think it's important to cover about the Mandalorians. In direct opposition to their infamy as a ruthless enemy, Mandalorians cherish family and share affection upon those they love and care for. In Mandalorian society, marriage is expected to be a lifelong and usually takes place shortly after a Mandalorian turns 16 years old. And marriage itself is usually a private ceremony between only the two involved, where they entered into a legal commitment by reciting the following pledge. Mi solus tome, mi solus daratame, mi bien, and mi arjun, which basically translates, we are one together, we are one parted, we share all, we will raise warriors.
Okay, these... Nobody say nothing, we're not married, right? Okay, we're good. Yeah, okay, Ranger married somebody. I don't know who it was, but it wasn't us.
Wait till we get to Vegas. These vows could be exchanged in person, in a text communication, or over comlink from anywhere across the galaxy. Though the ceremony itself was private, following the wedding, it was customary to celebrate the new couple's union with drinks and festivities among family and friends. Despite the importance placed on chastity and fidelity prior to marriage and species that practice such, a partner who acted unfaithfully during a long separation would be forgiven so long as the child that results from the indiscretion is raised together by the couple. In certain rare circumstances, such as an abandonment or a failure to live up to their responsibilities, partners could divorce one another with a declaration that they were shock la written, I can't say it, a broken love, basically. Marriage on Mandalore was not limited by gender. For instance, Goren Bevan and Medrit Versen were two men who were a married couple. Adoption was extremely common in the Mandalorian culture. We've seen that already with Jin and Grogu, to the point where even adults could be adopted. Because of the Mandalorian's constant connection to war, widows and orphans became an inescapable fact of life, and adult males became not only welcome but necessary. Like marriage, the Mandalorian's ritual for adoption was rather simple. Known as the Gay Balmondo, name and soul, the adoption is carried out by the adopting parents, stating to the intended child, I know your name as my child. In addition to following the Rezal Inari, the simple adoption ritual is all that it took to make an individual a Mandalorian. Adoption of war orphans was quite common. Even children of a defeated enemy were asked other species might kill them. Examples of this tradition include Jango Fett being taken in by Jaster Merrill and Skirata, adopting the Null ARC trooper and the commandos of Omega Squad just as he had been adopted by his father, Moonin. To Mandalorians, there was no difference between a biological child and one who was adopted. Although the Mandalorian custom of adoption has done away with specific ethnic types, the tendency for adoption had accidentally formed a population of family-oriented warriors by reinforcing those common genes with those desired characteristics being that they take in, with the instinct to be protective parents especially strong. However, a couple could choose to have children. They are an integral part of Mandalorian families. When naturally conceiving, if the firstborn is a son, parents will typically wait until the boy's 8th birthday before having another child, so that by that point, the boy would be old enough to accompany his father and begin his 5 years of military and survival training until the age of 13. If the firstborn is instead a girl, the couple would often try for a son soon after. While girls tend to stay with their mothers until marriage, a family with only daughters will train them in the same manner as they would a son. Both girls and boys learn their earliest lessons from their mother, meaning that her own finding prowess is critical. The pledge to raise warriors in the Mandalorian marriage vow is a joint commitment. It was the job of a parent to prepare the children to train the next generation of Mandalorians. elders educated Mandalorian children with the Mandalorian ideas of loyalty to clan, discipline, courage, and respect for their heritage. At the age of 13, children of both genders face a rite of passage known as the Vird Goten, where their skills are tested and they are declared adults in Mandalorian society. Family bonds were a large part of the Mandalorian culture, and as a result, they felt more comfortable around each other than they did around outsiders. Though there were thousands of Mandalorian families or clans, some of the more prominent ones include Clan Fett, Skarada, Ordo, Raylor, Bevan, Bavut, and of course, we know this one, Vissla. So those are the some of the big clans that you've heard about, and we've seen it in the
Clan Kreese as well, right?
Kreese, yeah. I don't know why I didn't have it in there, but that's a big one too, because that was a ruling family of Mandalore. So yeah, big part of that. You could be adopted, and once you're in, your family, they don't care. You're in your family. We're going to train you. We took a vow. You're going to become a warrior. It's our job to raise you. So family is a big deal to the Mandalorians. Their clans were a big deal to them. That's why loyalty to the clan was a big deal. Questions?
Well, I just want to say, with all the talk of the marriage, the ceremony, the not being able to cheat, but if you did cheat on them and stuff like that, I want to retract my statement about them being like the Amish.
Feel pretty dumb right now, don't you?
I feel it's like intended. An idiot.
Yep.
Like, well, I didn't know that part. I didn't know how it was gonna go.
That's the way it goes sometimes. All right, let's continue with the
sometimes
questions.
Sometimes you gotta shoot your shot.
Mm. Yeah, you gotta shoot your load. Okay. Your load missed. Ramus, Bamus, Maximus, Desmus, Meridius.
Questions? I love shooting a load.
Besides that, any other questions on the family structure and clans and stuff of the Mandalorians?
So you said that they would immediately, if they had a girl, they would try for a boy. But at what point do they just say, you know what? We're not going to have a boy. We're just going to have a whole bunch of girls. And so guess we got to train up these girls to be badass motherfuckers.
Well, they're going to get trained anyway. Girls were trained just as much as the boys were. But the priority was for the boys, for the continuation of the line. But yeah, girls, you know, you just said in the passage, if it was they had girls, they would raise them up. That both parents would teach them. They would still go through. All children went through the rite of passage. Yeah, the thing was for the boys, you know, for the continuation, the bloodline, sure. The name.
Okay.
You know, this is the way they were, but yeah. Wolfie, you're over there stroking the Robin Hood chin beard there.
I think we're chilling.
Chilling?
I think we're good. Yeah.
All right, let's cover one more thing, and then I'm going to open up to general questions for you guys, and we can talk about it. So, the armor. And one of the best things known for the Mandalorians was their Beskar armor. The thing most often associated with the Mandalorian was their armor. In Manda'a, it was known as Beskar Gam or Iron Skin, a show of just how central it was to the Mandalorian's life. Armor was greatly valued, especially if made by the near-indestructible metal Beskar, and was often passed down through generations. Aside from its defensive capabilities, armor served another function. In a group formed from so many different species, oftentimes it was only the armor that displayed an outward sign of the culture that bound these individuals together. The paint scheme of a Mandalorian's armor occasionally represented a soldier's state of mind or their personal mission. For instance, sand gold represented a quest for vengeance, while black indicated a desire for justice. This was not always the case, however, the Mandalorians would sometimes decorate their armor in colors that they simply held a preference for. Blue and green were common choices, whereas many soldiers preferred the inconspicuous afforded by camouflage. Mandalorians believed in the saying, it's one thing to see it's coming. It's another to do something about it. And Beskar armor is the thing that made the Mandalorians so ridiculous.
Oh, I love armor.
I just wore the full set on our Hindy stream we do on Fridays in my stream. So I've got a picture of me in the full Beskar armor. It's a big deal. I mean, the armor is a big deal. That's what made them so powerful. And armor was passed down because Beskar is damn near indestructible. I mean, you have to really put it in like ridiculous heat to, you know, to destroy it and stuff like that. But it could block blaster bolts. It could block lightsabers. It was ridiculous how powerful the armor was. And they were very covetous of that armor. Only Mandalorians knew how to forge it, how to make it, Armorsmiths are very respected in Mandalorian culture because those they make the armor and things of that nature, and they make it out of Beskar. You had to earn certain pieces of armor, as we've seen in the Mandalorian show. So, yeah, the armor is what's essential. Mandalorians were warriors, and they would use the armor to make them even more destructive and more powerful as warriors, you know, because that's just what they did. That's what makes the Mandalorians so badass. You know, they weren't unstoppable because we've seen that they were not unstoppable. But, you know, if I've got a battalion of Mandalorians and a battalion of anybody else, I'm putting my money on the Mandalorians because they fight as a team when they're together. Their individual fighting prowess and armor weaponry. Again, they always had the best weapons, the best armor. They lived by that tenet. When they went into fight, they went in there to kick your ass and win. They were not there. They don't fuck around. They go in there and they have no fear. They want to go into battle to prove themselves. And that's represented by their armor. But they weren't stupid either. They went in there with the tactical advantage and the armor advantage and the weapon advantage. Whether they were bounty hunters, mercenaries, fighting for the Mandalore, it didn't matter. That's what made the Mandalorians so powerful, is their weaponry, their armor, and the way they fought in clans and groups.
Tactical prowess.
Yes, very much so. Because remember, they're raised as warriors. That's what they do. They're raised.
They are the Star Wars version of 300.
Basically, they're the Spartans of 300. That's actually a really good point. They are the Spartans of Star Wars. So there you go. That's the Mandalorian culture, society, a lot of legend stuff in there, but there is some canon stuff mixed in there as well. It's that point of the stream, or the stream, but the recording where we open it up to the idiots. What are your questions, thoughts, anything? We'll start with the Wolf. Wolf, what do you got for me?
Man, we've been doing good, honestly. I don't think we got any crazy questions over here. My only real thing, I guess, was like a sort of a throwback to the Darksaber being passed down. I'm pretty sure Luke is the Mandalorian, right? Like if Maul beat Tar Vizsla or Pre Vizsla for the Darksaber, and then Obi-Wan beat Maul, and then after Obi-Wan beat Maul, Vader beat Obi-Wan, and then I guess Luke technically beat Obi-Wan, so he's the Mandalorian.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep. You have to actually defeat them when they're using the actual Darksaber.
Yes.
Do you though?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Or do you have to defeat them? I mean,
well, because at that
yeah,
point,
this
like...
isn't the Elder Wand, okay? Yeah. Well, you have to fight him in combat with the blade, and then whoever wins is now has the option of just having
right.
The
so who did Maul lose it to?
Maul lost
nobody.
Nobody.
He left it on Dathomir, and it was stolen from him.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Maul died to Obi-Wan after the Darksaber was just pilfered.
Wait, no,
didn't
they find when they went to Dathomir? Didn't they find the Darksaber there? Sabine found it.
Yes, yeah, Sabine. They found the Darksaber.
But yeah,
they
were stolen from Maul
it.
And taken to Dathomir, and then she found it, and then she was training to use it, but she hadn't.
I'm saying Maul had it on Dathomir. It was stolen from Maul on Dathomir,
yeah,
and
right.
they started to train it and use it like it was whatever. So. It was just stolen from Maul.
So technically, someone has to go and kill Maul in order to be the rightful Mandalore again.
No, whoever.
We got to resurrect him.
So
it's insane.
We don't know how.
It's a slippery slope.
Here's one thing we don't know. We know Moff Gideon stole it. I don't think he fought Bo-Katan in combat to get it, but he did take it from her. However, he fought Jin with the Darksaber. That's combat. And he beat him. So that's how Jin has the Darksaber. He has the choice. If he wants to, he can unite the Mandalorians, or he can just have it. He doesn't. He's got the choice, but
he needs to learn how to wield it first.
Yeah.
He's
so
pretty bad at it.
And it was a nice thing to see.
I mean, you saw the difference between Bo and him. He picks it up, and it's like a heavy cutlass type sword where it's huge, and he can't barely lift it, and he's crude with it, and the Bo is swinging around like she's handled a lightsaber before. She's fine.
Yeah,
just had no problem.
She's had years
right
of experience with
of course
that. You know, she knows all about it. She's used it multiple times. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we don't know how she lost it, because she ends up getting it in Rebels, but then we don't know from that point to the purge with Gideon, right, what happens to how he got it from her, whether he stole
maybe it. We'll learn in this season.
Yeah, I would like to learn how she lost it, because if she fought him in battle and lost it, then Gideon particularly, but I don't think Gideon is the kind of guy that would fight honorably and stuff. We've seen that. So yeah. Okay, Kashmir, you have some questions I can just see pondering in that brain of yours.
Well, you know how, like, we're coming up, we're, you know, baseball season pretty much, how the catchers have that, like, the throat protector. After the Battle of Geonosian, and watching Django get decapitated by somebody, I will not mention the name.
Why are you doing this?
Do you think they would have started making, like, a throat protector? Like, it just makes sense.
So to piggyback off on that, if you go and play KOTOR and Old Republic, you actually see Mandalorians have a helmet with a throat protector, and it's like it comes down like right here. So now the question is, why would they not come up with it? But the question is, why did they ever stop using it in the first place? Because once they stop using it, now you have Django getting killed by a certain respected Jedi.
Well, the problem in that fight, so here's the counterpoint. First of all, Django thought his jetpack was going to work. So, you know, he thought he was going to be able to dodge that strike. Unfortunately, his jetpack had already been damaged, and then he was, you're facing Mace Windu. You deserved when that happened. Sorry,
you
Django.
You said it, not Ram.
I'm saying it, but they brought it up because they're potato heads. So, but if you think about it, the freedom when you're wearing armor to, like, you know, their helmets and stuff, 99% of the time they can see the attack coming, they can block, you know, that kind of thing. Django didn't even have a chance, you know, Mace just got him. So most of the time, and you want that, you don't want that restriction. You got this here, you know,
he couldn't just like lower his head or something. Cause that, I mean, just the ever slightly, cause if you go back and you watch the clip, Mace is running full speed, blocking deflector or blaster bolts, and still slices him within just that much of a distance through his neck. So literally all Django needed to do, it was a beautiful strike, but all Django needed to do, if you think about it, is just lower his head just a little bit, because that blade would have hit that chin and then blocked it.
Well, we talked about the force powers. Mace could have been using his force speed to be just a blinding blur at that moment.
Sure.
Too. We talked about, they don't really depict it as much, but most Jedi and Sith could use the force to really enhance their speed and reflexes to where you didn't see it coming, you know?
Also, speed aside, if we're talking force powers over here, who's to say he can't use the force to tilt Django's head back a little bit so he could just go and open up the shot for himself?
And remember, he had Shatterpoint too, so he could see where attack and opportunity was going to be as part of that too. So, I mean, Mace had a lot of stuff in his inventory of badassery he could do to take on, you know, someone like Django. Because we saw Django, Jedi came after Duke, and he was like, and took him out like no problem. I mean, Django was known.
Yeah, Django was well known for killing Jedi. But even after he was excommunicated from the Mandalorian, like he was well known for being a Jedi killer.
But I think most times it's just one of those things. But I mean, you know, the Beskar armor even on Jyn, and only covers certain points. He still has to have that range of movement. So his elbow and around this area is open. There's opportunities on his leg that you can attack, but and he does get hurt, you know, but I mean, it's not an Iron Man costume where it's 100% covering him, you know? So
I was doing some research while you guys were talking, and I looked it up, and it's because of shrinkflation. That's why they stopped that part, you know, because of the inflation, and they have to spend less money. You buy it for the same amount, but you're getting less.
You just,
so as you pass,
it's like,
your
it's like
armor
watching
down
the child of a
mind,
like the mind of a child. It's just looking
you
at
know,
him just like
Kashmir. None of that would have happened.
This is an.
They just had the stick.
This no stick.
Well,
Mandalorians didn't have the stick. You can't even bring the stick in.
You don't know that they didn't have the stick. Maybe they did.
Then you go find the point where you show me the Mandalorian that was known for his famous stick. Go look it up, and then you can bring it up.
That was going to happen. It's going to happen. And when it does, you're going to look like a real idiot. You're going to join us on this panel of idiots.
I want the source, too. You can't just say spout some nonsense. I want the source, and I want to see it verified. And I'm going to do a college professor on your end.
Can we see the source of where they didn't get the stick?
Prove to me that there's a stick, and then and with your source, and then I there's no mention of any sticks. If you can prove it to me with source material, then I will verify.
What do you mean there's no mention of any stick? There was a stick.
With the Mandalorians.
No idea what we're talking about,
nonsense. It's what they do. They're fascinated by, you know, Bask, the Jedi Master, Vex Arkun, that beat him with a stick. They think stick is magical.
It's like like episode 3. What? No, have our episode 3. That's when we started when we find out about the stick.
And it was a later episode, but it's recent, and they're fascinated by the stick. I'm sorry you had to be a part of this one. I just want to have a normal conversation.
The stick has magical powers, I'm telling you.
No, it doesn't. Okay. Any final thoughts? We're gonna wrap this one up because you guys have pissed me off with the stupid ass sticks shit again. Another lore series.
I think I'm okay.
Gone down the goddamn pipe because of the stupid ass stick. Talk about Mandalorians and all the cool stuff and anything we could talk about the Mandalorians. They want to focus on stick from 5 episodes ago. And every episode this happened. All right. With that being said, I think we're good. Wolfie, anything you want to... You can check out Wolf and Battalion and Ram on the Battalion. They do a lot of Star Wars Galaxy Heroes content. Every 2 weeks on their channel, they do... a round table, you can check that out. And then what else? Ram has his own stuff.
KOTOR with the boys.
We do KOTOR with the boys on RSG. And then Wolf does his stuff on his channel, so you can check it out. The Wolf, and then Ram Bam, of course, you know about Ram Bam, which I should be joining him on a stream tonight. Of
Rogue Actions on every Monday.
Yeah, Rogue Actions with the Heinze. We're on the Heinze stream on Fridays as well for Star Wars Galaxy Heroes. Do the Old Republic with the boys on Tuesdays, and then we do this, and then all kinds of stuff. And then Kashmir, we were doing reviews for the shows, so you can check out our latest one on Bad Batch episode 13 and Mando season 3 episode 3 on the channel as well, so you can check that out. We do cover reviews on what we think on the shows and everything, and give it a rating. So so with that, as I said, hit the thumbs up, leave comments, think about coming to Patreon. Our next goal, if we get to 1500, dumbass Kashmir over here has to do one on Grandmaster Yoda.
Ooh.
And then if we get to 2,000 in Patreons, the lovely Desi is going to do a lore video about Night Sister. Yes, I know.
Do it up.
So we'll have the sultry voice of the Desi doing her thing. So with that, thank you for joining us on this episode of Lore with Idiots. Have a great rest of your day. This will be out Monday, Tuesday for the Patreons. They get it early. And then next Friday, it'll be out as same bad time for the rest. So
I think we need to end this one a little bit differently.
No, we don't.
We do. You know, you normally say
stick or anything. I'm ready to
hit
stop.
No, you normally say, you know, peace out or whatever. But like we just talked about Mandalorians. We got to end it with this is the way.
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 And we're out.